World champion at something. During the Second World War, my father stayed in hiding with his parents and a couple of other people. They dug a hole in the ground in some farm in Baranovice, which was where my father was born. He was a teenager at the time, and the plan was that they'll stay in that hole only for one night when the Germans would come through town. But what happened was that the son of this farmer who hid them was a collaborator, so he offered the Germans to use his father's farm as a headquarters so they couldn't come out. And instead of one day, they stayed there 600 days. It was they didn't dig a big hole. They haven't dug a big hole, so they couldn't lie down in it or stand in it. They could only sit in it for 600 days. And I remember when I was like a teenager, I asked my father one day, how come you came out of this without being crazy? You know, like after 600 days when they took them out, they didn't control the muscles, they couldn't do anything. And my dad said that he believed that everybody was a world champion of at something. But the tragedy is that most people don't know what they're good at. You could be a brilliant tennis player and learn the piano all your life. So my father said that during the war, he had realized that basically his great talent was in sleeping. And when he was in hiding, he fell asleep. And when he woke up, he asked his father, "Father, is the war over?" And his father said, "No." So he said, "I'm going to go back to sleep." And this is how he slept for as many hours as he could and kept his sanity through the war. Coffee.
Champion at something.
My father had died 5 weeks ago.
My father
He had a problem. He had a cancer in the base of his tongue. At some stage, he couldn't eat, and he was not allowed to drink. So he was fed straight to the stomach. The reason they didn't allow him to drink was that whenever he would take a drink, it would go directly to his lungs. So basically, it would be like drowning. In the last few months of his life, we spent a lot of time together. And my father's favorite thing was to sit in cafes. So every time we would go next to a cafe, he would say to me, "This looks like a nice cafe.
Lie down in it.
Let's sit down." And I said to him, "But father, you know, you can't eat. You're not allowed to drink." And he said, "But you are." So I would sit with him, and when we sat there together, I would order something, you know, I would order a Diet Coke, and then just when the waitress was about to leave, he would stop her and say, "And a double espresso."
Something,
and I knew it was coming because what I'm telling you happened.
You could be
maybe 30 times.
And learn the piano.
So I would look at him, and he would do this motion like, "What can I do?" You know. And I would get my drink.
Basically,
he would get his drink.
Was in sleeping.
And like somebody who's doing something that is not allowed, he would snatch the espresso and drink it all in one shot.
Is the war over?
And the moment he would do that, the coffee would go straight into his lungs.
And this is how he slept.
And he would start suffocating because he was really, it was like somebody swallowing water while swimming. And it was very noisy. And the people around him would react, you know, they would get up, you know, and want to help. But after some 20 or 30 seconds, he would just go, and he would spit like everything out just where we sat. And then, as if it was like the most normal thing in the world, he would take out a cigarette and light it and would say, "Good damn coffee." Pride.
Coffee. Champion at something.
So when I was a child, I think I was about 10,
and
we drove somewhere, and my father talked about something, I don't remember, but it was something that he was proud of.
At some stage,
and I asked my father, what is the thing that, from all the things that he did in his life, what was the thing that he was most proud of? It was a long drive, and he didn't answer immediately. He kind of thought about it.
So basically,
and as he drove, after some minutes, he said to me, I think the thing I'm most proud of is that I fought in 6 wars in the infantry,
so every time
always in the first line, and I never hurt anybody.
Like a nice cafe.
And which was quite a feat. But I must say that I come from a lineage of bad soldiers. My father was not the first and not the last.
I would order something.
My most famous father's war story was that he was left to guard his camp during the war, the 6 day war. And a group of Egyptian commando soldiers got into the war, and my to the camp, and my father had surprised them with breakfast. He basically made them omelets and coffee. And after that, when this incident was investigated, his commanding officer said, didn't you notice that they were speaking Arabic? So my father said, I noticed, but so what? I can speak Arabic too.
Really, it was like somebody swallowing water while swimming. And it was very noisy. And the people around him would react, you know, they would get up, you know, and want to help. But after some 20 or 30 seconds, he would just go, and he would spit like everything out just where we sat. And then, as if it was like the most normal thing in the world, he would take out a cigarette and light it and would say, good damn coffee.
Pride. Coffee. Fathers in my stories.
So when I was a child, I think I was about...
Well, I think that one of the most stressing things when you write stories is that people kind of can recognize themselves in your stories.
And I asked my father,
and this is not always a pleasant experience for those readers. I think it's not only even the question of the way that they're being perceived by me, but just this initial thing that they're being represented. For me, if you ask me what's one of my greatest fears, I'm saying from mundane things, you know, not kind of being eaten by a lion kind of thing, then the thing that I hate and fear the most is listening to my voice on an answering machine.
I must say that
which is kind of weird because right now it feels as if I'm listening to my voice about 150 answering machines. Because I sound kind of different, so I write many stories that touch family topics and deal with my family. And one time, my father said to me, "You know, I've noticed that in half of your stories, the father is very, very stupid, and in the other half, he's a complete asshole."
With breakfast,
but in all of them, I feel that you love me.
Made them omelets and coffee, and after that, when this incident was investigated, his commanding officer said, "Didn't you notice that they were speaking Arabic?" So my father said, "I noticed, but so what? I can speak Arabic too."
Really, it was like somebody swallowing water while swimming, and it was very noisy, and the people around him would react, you know, they would get up, you know, and want to help. But after some 20 or 30 seconds, he would just go, and he would spit like everything out just where we sat. And then, as if it was like the most normal thing in the world, he would take out a cigarette
and light it and would say, good damn coffee.
Bedtime stories.
Fathers in my stories.
So when I was a child, my mother and father would tell me bedtime stories. Because the childhood memories were kind of mixed with the memories of the war,
the idea of bedtime stories was kind of, especially
for my mother who was younger than my father, it was stories that were told to her during the war. And those stories were stories that her parents would tell her in the ghetto with no access to books. So there were stories that they made up.
If you ask me,
they made up one of like especially for her. And I think it was my parents that was this kind of thing that when they were very literate people, but when it came to telling me bedtime stories, they would always make up the stories. They were completely aware of the fact that they can buy a copy of the book, but it felt to them like
kind of weird,
feeding right your kid fast food or a TV dinner. It's something that a lazy parent does. A parent who loves his child, kind of one of his responsibilities was to make up a story each night for his child. And it's tradition that I still keep, and I make up a story for my son. He calls it stories from the head. And my mother's stories, they were always like involved a lot of fairy creatures, leprechauns, unicorns. And my father's stories always took place in a whorehouse.
I feel that you love me.
When I was 5 years old, I didn't know what a whore was. So I asked my father what's a whore, and he said that being a whore or prostitute is this profession that is really built on listening to other people's trouble. And since I loved all the whores in his stories, I really wanted when I grew up to become a male prostitute, because those stories were filled with compassion and love, and I really deeply feel that they taught me how to be a better man. It was only when I grew up I understood why my father would tell me all those stories, because after the war, he joined the underground, the resistance that fought against the British, and he would buy weapons for them in Italy from the mafia, and to save money he would sleep in parks. But the mafia guys who felt sorry for him said, "We have a whorehouse, and there's always a free room there, so you can live there." And this was apparently the happiest year in his life, which he wanted to share with me.
Bedtime stories.
Apartment buying.
Fathers in my stories.
Because my father spent all that time in the hole in the ground, he always had this thing that he wanted. I have two siblings that he wanted each of us to have a room of his own, but we couldn't economically afford that. So my father would keep saying, I'm going to save money, I'm going to buy a big apartment. And one day when I was 7 years old, he finally bought this apartment. It was a new apartment. We waited for a very long time to go and see this apartment. It was just a few weeks before we were supposed to move to it. And we all wore our most beautiful clothes, you know, as if, I don't know, like I see movies, people going to church or something, you know, it was a big moment. And when we went there, it was a house with an elevator, which was a big thing in the 70s in Israel, and we pressed the top floor, and we entered this apartment, and it had the most beautiful view, and each of us had his own room. And me and my brother and sister were very happy, but my mother didn't seem to be so happy. And my father said to her, "Ona, what's your problem?" And she said, "Why doesn't it have a floor?"
and my mother's...
Well, you know, look, kind of, this moment we looked and we did see that the apartment didn't have a floor. There was only sand. And my father said, you know, I kind of overshot a little and I didn't have money for the floor, but we'll get it someday.
When I was,
and
when
my I mother was said, I cannot live in an apartment without a floor. How do you want me to wash the floors that we don't have? You want me to get the sand wet? And my father said to her, I'm going to solve it. Come on, don't be so negative. Give me a chance. I always solve things. I'm going to solve it. And it got delayed. We moved to our apartment a little bit later than we wanted to. But when we got there, all the floor was covered with this beautiful ceramic, which I never saw any other place in the 70s in Israel, in a socialist country. Every room in a different color. And it was really amazing. And we all asked our father, how did you get the money for it? And he said, it's a secret. But we found out about the secret. Because only when I grew up, a couple of months later, I was taking a shower, and while I was taking a shower, three people entered our bathroom. I was naked at the time, and one of them said to the two other, you see, this is our red volcano tiles, and let me show you now another style of tiles. And it was only then that I've realized that he signed this agreement with a company that our house would be a model house for tiles, floor tiles for a year. Pride.
Apartment buying.
My father spent for my father's 70th birthday, I bought him a plane ticket to Moscow.
Two siblings.
We flew there together. I just had a book out there.
Economically
and I thought, you know, my father, he came from Branovice, which was technically then Poland, now Belarus. But Russia was a place close to him. And it was the first time he joined me on a reading trip. So I thought, you know, that he would have fun seeing me read with an audience. And he did have great fun. And we flew together. And we stayed in the same room in the hotel. And I was supposed to have my first reading there. And before that, I had a nap. And when I opened my eyes, I saw my father leaning over me, holding a comb in his hair. It's not a comb, a hairbrush, actually. So I said to him, Father, what's going on? And he said, I want to comb your hair before we go to the event, so your hair will look nice.
Didn't seem to be
and
so
I said
happy.
To her, but my father, this is my style. My hair doesn't look nice. This is the way I am. And he said, but this trip is my birthday present. So I ask as part of my birthday present, so well, one time in your life, you will go with your hair the correct way.
It was only sand.
So I said, okay. So he wet my hair and he combed it in a way that you often see 6 years old in Catholic school. Like kind of sideways, very, very strange, very, very neat. And I had to go to the event with my hair like this.
And my father said,
I've read, and the beautiful thing when you read in Eastern Europe, that people are not cynical at all. So when you read, you know, they can start crying and they react very emotionally. And I saw my father was very excited.
But when we got,
and when the event was ended, they introduced me to the Russian Minister of Culture who came to the event, and he shook my hand, and I asked him also. I introduced my father, and he shook my father's hand, and my and the Minister of Culture said to my father,
because
your father, your son, writes such beautiful stories, and my father said, forget about the story. What do you think about his hair?
And one of them said to the two other, you see, this is our red volcano tiles, and let me show you now another style of tiles. And it was only then that I've realized that he signed this agreement with a company that our house would be a model house for tiles, floor tiles for a year.
Pride. Why do I make stories? So this is a weird one.
For my father's 70th birthday.
But I think that one of the reasons that I make stories is sometimes there is something about reality
that
can be both arbitrary and overwhelming. And I have this tendency that I can be in a situation and I imagine it as a part of a story or a film, and I imagine it kind of differently.
And it was the first time.
And when I went to my father's funeral,
so I thought, you know,
they have this thing. I don't know. I think maybe it's only Jewish cemetery. That this guy who works in the services asked me to come and recognize my father's body,
and I was supposed to
just to make sure that, you know, that because the body is covered, to make sure that they're burying the right person. And I saw my father there, and there were two guys. And there was something about their energies that, you know, they were not bad or heartless, but it was just their work. And they wanted me to say, he said, is that your dad? And I saw my father dead.
And I said to her,
and I saw him dead before, but it was different because it was after some hours. And they said, and I was like shocked. And I said, is that your dad? And I said, yes. But when I looked at it, I made up the story in my mind. And in the story, I was entering the room, and they asked me, is that your dad? And I said to them, no, this isn't my dad. And one of them shouted on the other guy in Yiddish, what the hell did you do? Did you do it again? You know, and they started fighting,
like kind of sideways,
and at some point I said to them, no, no, guys, I was just kidding, he is my dad. And the first guy said to me, this isn't funny. And I said, sorry. And I left the room, and then I saw my sister, and I said to my sister, come with me, I have to tell you something. And she said to me, what? And I said to her, this is not our dad. And she said to me, so you should tell them. And I said, no, 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 I shouldn't, because, you know, mother is here and everybody's here, and I can't go through it again. And we should just bury him. And then we bury him. And then I realized that my father is actually alive. That it was all a trick, you know. That he wanted people to think that he's dead, but he isn't really dead.
And my father
he's just somewhere, you know. And then I started looking for my dad after the funeral. And this was all the thoughts that I had while I looked at him. And somehow it made the reality is slightly more bearable.
Let me show you now another style of guys. And it was only then that I've realized that he signed this agreement with the company that our house would be a model house for tiles, floor tiles, for a year. Pride.
Protected.
Why do I make stories?
So this is a weird one. I flew to the U.S. Sunday.
Sometimes
I think it's about like 11 days ago. I had a night flight,
and
very light night flight, and I showered my 6-year-old son before that. And we have a very rusty bathtub. And when I took him out, he does those pranks. So he kind of headbutted my stomach, and he slipped. And he was about to fall, and his head was about to hit the rusty part of the bathtub. And I jumped, and I put my hand, and my hand kind of cushioned his fall, but I cut my finger. And because it was really rusty, I had to go and take a tetanus shot. And when I came back and I put my son to sleep in bed, I saw that he was very much like,
and there was something about
he was in a situation, you know,
and I asked
him what's going on, and he said, why did you jump and put your hand there? I'm the one who should get the cut. I'm the one who should get the tetanus shot. I did something crazy. You didn't do anything.
Is that your dad?
And I said to him, it's okay, you know, it's just the thing that a father would do, you know. And he said, yeah, but why would the father do that? It makes no sense.
And they asked me,
and I say, you know,
and I said to them, no,
a father has this kind of instinct to protect his son.
in Yiddish.
So he said, but why does it have this instinct? It's just not right. Why does it have this instinct?
And at some point I
said to him, you know, I think this word is tough enough that everybody, every person in this world should have one person.
And I said, sorry.
And whom he knows that whatever you do, you always be there to protect his back.
He said to my sister, come with me.
And my son was quiet for a second, and he said to me, what? Now that grandfather is dead,
this is not our dad.
Who's going to protect your back, daddy?
He said to me, so you should tell them. And I said, no, I shouldn't. Because, you know, mother is here, and everybody's here, and I can't go through it again.
And we should just bury him. And then we bury him. And then I realized that my father is actually alive. That it was all a trick, you know. That he wanted people to think that he's dead, but he isn't really dead.
And my father
he's just somewhere, you know. And then I started looking for my dad after the funeral. And this was all the thoughts that I had while I looked at him. And somehow it made the reality is slightly more bearable.
Let me show you now another style of ties. And it was only then that I've realized that he signed this agreement with the company that our house would be a model house for ties, floor ties for a year.
Flag.
Protected. Why do I make stories?
So,
I flew here.
I wrote those cars last night,
Sunday,
in my hotel
11 days ago.
I switched only
night
one.
Flight.
This is the one that I've switched.
Very light night flight.
Because
and
what happened
my 6-year-old son before that.
I must say, and we have a
first,
I must say, you know, I hope I look normal to you guys. I'm doing my banks. But I have those strange peculiarities.
And he was about to fall, and his head was about to hit.
I felt it was very difficult for me to go on a reading tour with my father,
and I jumped
only my hand weeks ago.
My hand kind of cushioned his fall, but I cut my
pair of his shoes
finger
with me in my suitcase.
Because it was really rusty,
which was a weird thing to do, but I tetanus did it. And basically, whenever I go to a room, I put the shoe somewhere.
I saw that he was very massive.
It made sense. I don't know what kind of sense what I did. And this morning, I took a shower.
And I kind of.
And when I got out of the shower, I saw that my entire room was flooded.
Why did you jump and put your hands there?
All my luggage got wet.
My plastic got wet.
I'm the one who should get the tetanus shot.
Everything got wet.
I did something crazy.
You didn't
and
really
I looked for
that
stuff that I could wear,
and
you know.
Okay,
so I kind
no,
of took a pair of underwear and used the dryer to kind
do,
of dry it. And
he said, yeah, but why would the father do
and
that?
My shoes were completely
no
wet.
And they asked me, is that
so, you know, so I looked at my father's shoes and I said, okay,
kind of instinct to protect his son.
Maybe I did take those shoes with me
for
this for
a reason.
It's just not right. Why does it?
And
I said to him,
now I'm wearing my father's shoes.
And
tough
and
enough.
I think
and
that everybody, every person
I have many things to be grateful
one person
for.
And I said, sorry.
Having the kind
and
of father he
that
knows
that
whatever you do,
and
you always be there to protect
I guess
back.
Among those things, I can be grateful
and
that I have a pet father
watch,
who is exactly the same shoe size that I wear.
Who's going to protect your back, daddy?
He said to me, so you should tell them. And I said, no, I shouldn't. Because, you know, mother is here and everybody's here and I can't go through it again. And we should just bury him. And then we bury him. And then I realized that my father is actually alive. That it was all a trick, you know. That he wanted people to think that he's dead, but he isn't really dead.
And my father
he's just somewhere, you know. And then I started looking for my dad after the funeral. And this was all the thoughts that I had while I looked at him. And somehow it made the reality is slightly more bearable.
Let me show you now another style of ties. And it was only then that I've realized that he signed this agreement with the company that our house would be a model house for ties, floor ties for a year.